This is KUOW Seattle. Since January 1st, Deputy Police Chief Carmen Best has been running the Seattle Police Department. She took the job on an interim basis after Kathleen O'Toole left at the end of the year. Chief Best will lead the SPD as it makes changes to its use of force policy and biased policing, and it conducts contract negotiations with the police union. Chief Best grew up in Tacoma, worked as an accountant in the insurance industry before becoming a cop in the early 90s, and I asked her about those early days.
You're one of the few people in America who wants to hear cop stories because, you know, they tell them all the time. But there's so many different things that happen along the way. It's hard to pinpoint one. But I do remember being in a foot chase one morning. So someone had carjacked, you know, stolen a car by force in one area of the city. And I was listening to the call and it wasn't near where I was. So I, you know, was paying attention, but it was outside of my area. Then I look up and there's a car, right, turning down the street in front of me. We were right across the street from Volunteer Park. So I was following the car and I'm calling it out, you know.
You knew exactly what it was?
Yes. This is the car. I double checked. Is it this plate? And dispatcher comes back. Yep, that's the plate. Oh, well, I'm right behind them and we're headed eastbound on the road here. So I follow the car. It's early in the morning, so not a lot of officers were on duty at that point, but the car goes down, eventually down a dead end road. And I figured he's probably going to jump out and bail, which he did. And so I'm running and we're all running to chase this guy and we find him and take him into custody. No big issues, except that because I wore red lipstick at the time and we were running through bushes, some of the lipstick got on my uniform and everybody thought I had been shot or injured because they had all this red on my uniform. I go, no, I'm fine. It's just lipstick. It was kind of funny. We kind of joked about it later on, but one of those interesting moments.
Well, just lipstick on the patrol officer's uniform. How many women were patrol officers at that time?
You know, I don't remember the exact number, but we've always fluctuated between 10 and 14% in Seattle.
What happened? Did you get your bad guy?
Well, I got the bad guy. Yeah, I've been off and running ever since.
How long had you been on the job at that time, you figure?
Oh, probably a couple years at the most.
What was officer culture like then? This was early 90s?
Early 90s. I came on in 1992, in January of 92, finished the academy. So by the summer of 92, I was in the field.
Well, 92, this was about the time of the L.A. riots. You had the four L.A. police officers acquitted in the beating of Rodney King. How were Seattle police at that time, did you think, treating black people and other minorities?
Well, it's always been a topic of discussion in law enforcement, and certainly I came on right after those riots had occurred. We literally had riots in downtown Seattle, and I was one of, they stacked us up four persons to a car, and we had to go downtown and provide a presence and try to take anyone in custody who was committing, you know, obvious acts of violence.
Or, what was going on in downtown Seattle?
There was some sort of melee. So it was really tough. I mean, I'm African-American. I'm a woman. I'm very sensitive to the issues involving race and police and sort of the history there. And at that time, it was, you know, it was boiling over. It was very volatile. I didn't feel any less committed to the work, but I certainly was paying attention to what was happening in the field. I think we do a lot better job now. I don't think that the department even then was bringing on people who intentionally was bringing on people who had biases, but I think we do a lot better job now about training, about looking for those types of issues before people come into this career.
Well, this was early 90s. This is maybe 20 years before the consent decree when the federal government stepped in to try to right some problems. And I think I read that you said officers sometimes just had to do a rubber stamp on use of force statements. What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, we get the use of force statements. I thought our agency did a really good job about documenting force because some agencies at that point weren't even writing it down. And Seattle would, if they were forced to use, write it down, document it. You had to bring it in. A supervisor would look at it. But the supervisor is reading the report. They're not there at that time. They're not doing any extra investigation other than, you know, they're reading the report. They're looking, maybe talking to the officer about what happened. And then, you know, barring something in the report that says I did something wrong or in violation of policy, you sign off on it, right? Well, we're a lot more engaged and involved in what happens in use of force now. And with the advent of in-car video, people have cameras on their phones now. There's a whole lot more investigation that will go into force reporting than went into it before. So what I meant by that was that there just wasn't that level of extra oversight. So they were signing off and that was it. Now there's a whole lot more that goes into it.
As I said, in 2012, a Seattle police officer shot and killed John T. Williams, a Native American woodcarver who was homeless at the time, and that helped launch a 7-year Justice Department investigation and reform process. Can you tell me a story that illustrates how things have changed since 2012?
Well, there's a whole lot of processes that have changed. Even for myself going out in the field, I mean, the technology that we have now, you know, there's computers in the car that, you know, give you updates and information, and you can see the policies on the screen. We have 5 times more training than we ever had before. So we're training on a lot of different issues. We have crisis intervention training that everybody's required to have. So all of those things have made the job a lot different. We didn't at that point have cameras in the vehicles. Now we have cameras in the vehicles. We have cameras on the officers. It's a different job, you know, in that regard. The technology, the amount of reporting that's involved, the amount of oversight that the supervisors have on their employees. And now we have a force review board, a whole board of people who actually look anytime serious force is used about every aspect of force. And not just, like in the past, the force at that moment, but everything leading up to it. You know, did you de-escalate? Could you have avoided this? Could you have slowed it down a bit? Could you have called for backup? They weren't always looking at all those aspects in the past. It was more or less, you know, somebody did something to you and you reacted, and of course it was in policy because you were being attacked. But now we're looking at just the whole big picture of what goes into it. And it makes us better police officers because we're responding better to these situations.
Last summer, Chief Best, 2 Seattle police officers killed a pregnant mother, Charlena Lyles, and Seattle's Force Review Board said the officers acted within policy. The lawyer for Lyles' family said, until there are changes to policy and training, the same events could happen tomorrow. Does SPD need to change its policy or training in light of what happened to Charlena Lyles?
I would say, first, let me say this. It was nothing less than a horrific tragedy, what happened there. And there are a whole host of things that came into play that made that incident at that moment in time occur. I think there's a whole lot of failed systems that just didn't work in terms of mental health and other things that could have helped prevent those officers from being there at that moment dealing with that situation at that time. So that being said, I think that we need to work on a lot of different systems to make sure that no one falls through the cracks ends up in a situation like that.
Could this just as well happen tomorrow?
I mean, I can't predict the future. I'm not clairvoyant. Certainly there could be a situation where an officer-involved shooting occurs. I think that we are always looking at the potential for a tragedy. So we're trying to do everything that we can to prevent it through our training. And we will review every incident. And this incident isn't done yet. I mean, there'll still be an inquest. I mean, there's still an investigation that will occur further into it. We've done the initial, what the Seattle Police Department has done, the Force Review Board, but there's a whole larger gamut of information that will be looked at through the inquest process. And anything we can glean or learn from that, you know, we'll do that because we want to do a good job. And nothing is more important than the sanctity of life, right? And that under all circumstances, we're going to try to make sure that we do everything to protect life.
You know, the Seattle Seahawk, Michael Bennett, recorded a letter for ESPN, and I'd like your reaction to some of what he said.
Charlena Lyles, Michael Brown, Sandra Bland. How can we trust each other when so many of our people are lost? Freddie Gray, Tamir Rice. How can we trust each other when there's been no justice? How can we trust our system when nobody's been to jail? I don't really know how to make somebody value another human's life. An officer has to realize what it is to like to be a black man and what the history of police and in the black community. It's so emotional for us to forgive because we don't know how the next story is going to stop. At any moment, every black person that's in the car, when they see a police officer, they don't know what to expect. They don't know what to expect that this could be their last moment. Should they call their family? Should they tell their wife they love them? Should they call their kids and tell them they might be home tonight? They don't know. They just don't know. And I think when all those things have happened, it's just hard for us to trust again.
Chief Best, what does the Seattle Police Department do to rebuild that trust, that lost trust that Michael Bennett's talking about?
It's really important that, you know, we listen. I don't take what Michael Bennett or any other person is saying lightly. We know there's a history. So part of what we want to do is make sure, well, not just part, but a great part of what we want to do is make sure that we are talking to our officers, we're bringing the right people onto the department, that our department, for one, reflects the community that we serve. So there's that natural relationship building in that aspect of it, but also making sure that we're doing the appropriate amount of training and talking to officers about these issues of bias, of race, of history. We're not avoiding it. We're hitting it dead on because they are so important and because it does matter how people perceive us. If we can't build trust, we're not going to be an effective police department. So we've got to start at the basics by having that dialogue and trying to build trust. I absolutely can understand why there are concerns. I don't think anybody cannot understand that. But what are we going to do about it? How are we going to make it better? That is what I'm looking to do. Nothing is more important than building community trust. We have to do it.
What does Seattle Police have to do? How do you rebuild that broken trust he's talking about?
Well, you have to be visible. People have to get to know the officers in situations that aren't just, you know, crime situations or those types of issues. We have to be visible in the community, engage with community people. They have to see us at the fairs and parades and out there actually being a part of the community, not apart from the community. And so as we do that, as we get more engaged, as we build more programs, as people see us as the people that we are, this is just a uniform. It certainly isn't my life. It's just what I wear at my job. I think that building those relationships will make a difference. In fact, I was talking to one of the college presidents recently, and she was saying how much she really enjoys and likes some of the officers that she knows, but she's still leery about the ones that she doesn't know. So I told her, I said, we've got to make opportunities for people to get to know more of us and to know us in a way that's on a human level and humanize what we're doing here and who we are. Because I think once that happens, we will build trust.
I'm talking with Seattle's Chief of Police, Carmen Best. You know, Chief, given the history of police culture, I could imagine someone saying, a black woman, big city police chief, that's unusual. That's a culture clash.
I'm saying it's about time. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I just wonder how you actually, you're living it. How do you reflect on that?
You know, I think, like I said, I've been in this job for almost 30 years. And while some people will focus on that, I just focus on the fact that I've got the skills and the capability to do the work. I've been here doing it a long time. I'm committed to it. So
you get tired of being asked about your personal race and gender?
I understand this. It's a huge issue in society, so I wouldn't avoid that. But I also want to make it very clear that that's not the criteria by which I am applying for this position. I am strictly here because I think I'm capable and I know that I can get the job done.
The Chief of Police in Seattle, Carmen Best. I really appreciate this time. It's good to meet you.
Great. Thank you. Me too.
Carmen Best, Seattle's police chief, at least for now. She's got the interim job. Seattle's Mayor Jenny Durkan wants a new chief in the job by summer, and interim Chief Best's resume is on her desk. You're listening to The Record on KUOW. More in a moment.